Cool.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm honored to be sitting here with the legendary Denny Lane here in at Mexicali Live in Teaneck, New Jersey. Thanks for joining us today, Denny.
Well, it's very nice to be here. I'm really looking forward to this gig. You know, a great venue, you know, it's a trio thing, and it's just a great night for me.
Well, that's great. You know, I'm a big Wings fan, big McCartney fan, and growing up, I was always a Paul fan, of course, but growing up, when I would listen to the Wings records, your songs, honest to God, would just jump out at me, and it was like a breath of fresh air, and I was really in love with your particular tracks. In fact, on London Town, I would just freak out with Deliver the Children and, you know, just everything you did, and your contributions to that group, in my opinion, are just innumerable.
Well, you know, I always very flattered to hear that, obviously, and you know, I do my own thing, but I work well with Paul, and he has the same kind of background as me in the kind of music we loved, you know, which was folk and rock and roll and the old stuff. But, you know, I was always a writer, but a reluctant writer, and he brought it out, a lot of that stuff out in me, you see, and allowed me to do it, really. Whereas, like, I didn't go into that thing, really, to be a writer, you know. But he kind of made me. And since that, I've become more and more of a writer. And that's what I'm doing tonight, really. I'm doing, you know, my versions of those songs with a trio. Now, nobody's expecting to sound like the records. It's not a cover band. It's not a tribute band. But that song's a song, right?
Absolutely.
And that's what I like to be able to do with songs, is do them differently. And so, you know, that's always good to hear. Thanks. I really appreciate that because it encourages me as a writer. You know, I have had a hit with Say I Don't Mind with Colin Blundstone. Right. And I know that, you know, people like some of the stuff I do. So this is really, like, good for me to go out and play it more, you know.
Right. Now, you're telling me after writing Go Now,
I didn't write Go Now.
Oh, you didn't? Oh, all right. See, I didn't do... I'm a horrible journalist. All right. Well, anyway, having performed it, it's such a beautiful song. You clearly, you know, had some kind of inkling towards being a writer or being with, at least with those guys, with the Moody Blues. Did you... how much of a writer were you with them?
That's what I was getting at. The Moody Blues were really a blues band that played original... not original music, but original R&B that nobody else was playing at the time.
Right.
Meaning that we got hold of a lot of obscure stuff.
Cool.
And that's the way we kind of got our sound. But it came from America, you know, as everything does. I mean, the early days in Birmingham when I was a kid, we grew up listening to Radio Luxembourg, which was the American Forces network in Germany. So we were basically, you know, influenced by that stuff. Then we took it, made it our own, and brought it back to America. I believe that's the way it worked.
Nice.
And encouraged a lot of American kids to get into that, you know, the music we were into. And basically, it was a lot of old blues stuff. It was a lot of very, you know, R&B stuff that we loved. You know, we had to play a lot of the songs of the day, but we also threw in the extra, you know, these little obscure songs. And then eventually started to write. And the first album, which is called The Magnificent Moodies, I co-wrote most of the songs with Mike Pinder. And of course, they went on to their thing, and they ended up being writers too. And of course, the Beatles encouraged everybody to write their own too.
Right.
And, you know, I already knew Paul. I knew the Beatles. We'd done the second British tour with the Beatles, the Moodies. And he was always trying to push songs on me, even in those days.
Right.
Not necessarily his own songs. You know, he tried to get us to do Those Were the Days, which Mary Hopkins...
Oh, no kidding.
Oh, yeah. And he was always like the songwriter guy who was always around saying, I've got a song for you, you know.
Right.
And he's very, very prolific, but I'm not so much. But since I've done my own thing over the years and done what? Eight or nine albums, I suppose. Compilations, but you know, I've done a few solo albums. And I've written everything and learned to play a lot of the instruments as a result of being with Paul. because that's what I did with Wings. I became a multi-instrumentalist. I started to develop myself more. So, yeah, I've become more of a songwriter now. Too bad.
Very cool. You know, all of your contributions continue to live on with a lot of the reissues of, say, Band on the Run and stuff like that. You're still very much a part of that scene and that sound. And you know, I noticed. Are you familiar with Spotify, the online streaming music service?
No, I'm not.
It's kind of like, imagine you had an iTunes and you've downloaded every song in the world,
yeah.
But it's just there immediately to stream.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Your music, many of your albums, or they're sort of weird compilations, are available. I was just looking last night, and it's really great because when I was a little younger, even just in the 90s, you know, and I would think about you, and I would say, gee, I wonder what Denny's doing now, and I wonder where he is, and, you know, before pre-internet, you know, couldn't, it was difficult
couldn't
to research.
Find it, you couldn't do anything.
So now here you are in my own backyard, and all of your music is available. It's like too much to handle. It's crazy. How do you feel about your stuff or your involvement in everything that you've done and its resonance today? What are some reactions from audience members or people that you meet and stuff like that?
Well, obviously the good thing is that it is available and I don't have to do much to make it available. You see, it's all done for me now, whereas we, in the old days, we made our own management teams.
Yeah.
You know, everything was us, really.
Yeah, you had to push
using the big company as the sort of captain of the ship, but we did most, we brought our own people in. Well, now the internet, of course, has made everything available, and it's brought back stuff that, you know, I never thought would see the light of day now, you see. But, of course, you know, stuff that wasn't, shall we say, popular or known is being more well-received now.
Yeah.
And that makes me feel better, you know. It's not a matter of confidence. It's a matter of just, like, I felt pretty confident when I was doing this stuff. But when you go on to other things, you forget about what you've done before, somehow.
Right.
Unless you can go out and play it live, which is what I try to do, you know. But a lot of the stuff I go and play live is small sets, you know, and I do a few hits and whatever. But now I'm doing some of those songs, that's what I'm saying. And with it being on the internet and being out there in such a big way, like history repeating itself, that's great for me. See, the fact that Paul puts out stuff that's already been out and had huge success, but puts it, reissues it, and does whatever he does, everybody's still helping each other.
Right.
Now, great, but at the same time, I don't want to be living in the past.
Right.
You know.
Sure.
So it's great that that's out there, but I've got a new album. It's called Valley of Dreams. And that's, again, another era, you know. In fact, it took me... I started it 3 years ago.
Wow.
But I didn't get a chance... No, I did. I did it a few months there and a couple of months a year later.
Right.
And then it's been sitting on the shelf for about 6 months. But, you know, that's a new era thing for me. It's a whole new direction. And it's not that different to what I've done before, but it's, hey, it's coming out. And now that's the next thing I'm going to try and go with, you know.
I heard a rumor that you're currently writing a book about some experiences.
That's a difficult one.
Yeah.
Because writing a book is, you know, you've got to dig deep. You've got to really, like... And a lot of the stuff I don't remember. I mean, it's normal. You know?
Sure.
Even if I had the best memory in the world, and you know, I mean, you can't write it all down because there's so much, you know. So what you do is you write down what you remember, and that's what I'm doing.
Right.
And I've been doing it for a while, and you know, obviously, whatever I write, I'm going to run by Paul because it's only fair that I do that. But yeah. It's a book, but it's nowhere near finished. I mean, there's just so much stuff to compile into a small space. And, you know, it is draining, that's all I'm saying. You know what I mean? Going back and trying, you're worn out at the end of writing all this stuff down. But I have got a few hundred pages towards it.
Can you share maybe from the last 30 or 40 years, you know, a particular experience that really resonates with you, or something that you really remember as being like, wow, you know, just yesterday was something I'll never forget. I mean, all the things that you've seen in your life.
It's where do you start?
I
mean,
it's an unfair question.
No, it's not. It's just that there are, you know, with everything that you get involved in, there are certain things that stand out. You know, the whole thing about the Moody's was, you know, getting our first number one on the Chuck Berry tour, which was a huge high.
What tune was that?
Go Now was the first number one.
Go Now was the first number one.
Well, that was the first number one. I mean, Nights in White Satin came after me. That wasn't me, but it was certainly helped by the fact that we'd already had a number one, and you know, that was in England, and that was on the Chuck Berry tour. Because we were playing it live, and because we were getting a lot of radio and all the rest of it, it went to number one. You know, the best promotion you can have for a record is playing it live on a tour, a nationwide tour. Having said that, you know, a lot of things like joining Wings with Paul, or meeting Linda and Dennis Sidewell, and then getting Henry, my friend, in and starting that little thing was kind of a daunting thing. It was a challenge. I like a challenge, but it wasn't. I didn't expect it to be anything like that. I thought it might just be like, oh, I'm getting together with Paul to do an album. Right. You know, I never knew it would turn into a whole band thing. Especially,
I see those pictures of you guys at the Root Studio there, and it just looks like, wow, what a! I can't even fathom. I can't even imagine what, you know, the dynamics must have been like, and how you guys put all that stuff together. And
well, it was very simple. We went to Scotland. You know, he bought some land there, and he fixed up a couple of the homes there so that people could visit and get together. And basically, we were away from everyone and the public eye and everything. And you know, I mean, we were just friends getting together and playing like guys do, like bands do.
Sure.
They get together. And it developed into something, and we enjoyed it. And then that's it, really. But point is that I wasn't intimidated by Paul, whereas a lot of people would be, you know, because I knew him, and that's what made it easy for him. I think his problem was he didn't know where to go after the Beatles, because, you know, who do you work with now when you're so famous? Who's not going to be intimidated? Who's going to just take you for who you are, blah blah blah.
Right.
So that kind of came naturally, and it developed into a band without us really knowing it. And of course, when that started getting successful, there's a lot of stories that came out of that. It's just it was just like a momentum thing, you know. It just took off. I didn't have time to think about it, really, you know.
Well, I could sit here and talk to you all night. I know you have a big night ahead of you, and I know you have a lot of other people here that want to say hello and meet you. I want to say, this is actually not the first time we've met.
Oh, yeah.
I met you at a Beatle Fest sometime in 98 or something like that, and you were very, very wonderful. I waited in line, and you gave me your autograph, and the woman I was dating at the time, we left, and I said, "What, man, we just met Denny Lane, you know?" And she said, he's wearing such cool socks. She saw the socks that you were wearing, and they were like Argyle or something.
Oh, God.
But I'll always have that memory.
Yes, that's what you're talking about, memories.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Well,
and I really appreciate you sitting down with me, and I'm a big fan, and you're an integral part of that sound. Paul couldn't have done it without you all those years. And, you know, God bless you, and thanks for the wonderful music.
He helped me, too. He's, you know, people listen to me now, and they say, I can hear the Wings stuff there.
Right.
So that's all comes full circle.
Absolutely.
But thanks.
Yeah. You got it.
Good
well,
man.
Thanks for sitting down with me. Appreciate
it,
Dan.
My pleasure, man. Nice.